listening to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Located on the west coast of the continent of Africa, Nigeria is home to nearly 215 million people. Speaking more than 500 languages, the diverse population is among the youngest in the world. With a median age of 18, more than 70% of Nigerians are younger than 30. And the country's population is projected to double in the next three decades. Like its people, Nigeria is young and consequential as a democracy. Officially, Nigeria has been a democracy since achieving independence from British colonial rule in 1960. But in practice, Nigerian democracy has been fragile and embattled across the decades. Challenged by civil war, periods of military rule, and significant challenges with government corruption. Which is why the world has been watching closely the country's recent presidential elections.
I am profoundly humbled that you have elected me to serve as the 16th president of our beloved country.
That's Bolo Tinubu. He is 70 years old and declared victory with only 37% of the vote. Joining me now is Opay Aditeo, who is an independent journalist in Nigeria, who's covered the election for Al Jazeera and The Washington Post. Opay, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
And also with us is Ambassador Mark Green, President, Director, and CEO of the Wilson Center and former U.S. Ambassador to Tanzania. Ambassador Green, thank you for being here as well.
It's good to be with you.
Opay, help us to understand, how is it that a candidate won with only 37% of the vote?
Yeah, so this year's presidential election was a keenly and closely contested, race with three major parties. And that was unprecedented in Nigeria's democracy, whereby you have three major parties, right? So it is only logical that the figures, will be low. And since they have three major parties to share the vote, but also the low figure also speaks to the lack of legitimacy by the eventual winner. It lacks popular appeal among the young people who make the major bulk of the voting population for this year's electoral cycle.
So, am I to understand then that there is not a process for a runoff to ensure that in a crowded field, a candidate who's ultimately elected, makes it to that 50% threshold?
No. So to be declared a winner, all you need to do is to have the majority of votes, the highest number of votes, and to have 25% of the votes cast in 24 of Nigeria's 36 states and the FCT. So there's no constitutional provision that you have to reach the 50% threshold.
And, just for U.S. listeners, it is worth remembering that this is also true in the U.S., that we have had presidents who did not receive 50% of the popular vote, and that, it's simply the system of the Electoral College that gets us to a 270. So we know that there have been international election observers who have raised critical concerns about these elections. And as I pointed out, given that it can't exclusively be a question of a 50% threshold, what are the concerns in the way that this presidential election happened that has international observers worried?
Yes. So the election itself was a total disgrace. It was in shambles. It was marred by irregularities, violence, long delays, late openings of polls. For the sake of brevity, it was a complete shame. But most notably was the failure of the Electoral Commission to be faithful to its word and legal provisions that it had. This is the first time that the digital mode of tallying election votes was introduced to the Nigeria election, and that is the stakes for the election. It raised the expectations, but at the end of the day, the Electoral Commission refused to adequately adhere to its own provision, by digitally counting the votes, as opposed to the you know, long age manual system that we've been using. So this has put a lot of question marks on the vote, and has, you know, brought about allegation of rigging, and in some parts violence, and it has colored the entire election as a sham that has been orchestrated by the ruling party to favor its candidates.
Ambassador Green, I want to bring you in here because I understand that you were part of a delegation that observed the elections. Can you also talk to us a bit about what it is that has international observers concerned?
That's right. I co-led one of the international observer missions, co-led with former President of Malawi, Joyce Banda. So a few things. First off, we have to recognize that Nigeria faced a number of challenges going into these elections. So there was a bit of a cash crisis, fuel prices were high, and that certainly didn't help the turnout. However, having said that, the polls opened late, in a few places a day late. There were substantial issues in the uploading of results. There was a lack of transparency, and in some ways, that may have been the biggest problem of all. So when there were delays in opening the polls and delays in getting materials to those polls, because the Election Commission was opaque, never held a press conference and said, hey, look, here's what's happening, that caused people to be very suspicious. So when there's a void, when there's a lack of information, people suspect the worst. And that, I think, is what happened. In so many ways, it was that the Election Commission created high expectations and failed to achieve those expectations. And the expectations were reasonable ones. These were promises made by INEC, the Election Commission, and identified as concerns by long-term observers last year. And so it really was a great disappointment. The other thing I'd say is what you've heard from OPE is what I heard from almost everyone, including those who supported the APC, the eventual winner. Even if you supported the result, you were disappointed by how the elections were conducted. I had a number of people say to me, look, we're better than this. Nigerians are better than this. This is a motivated young population that is very literate when it comes to technology. And so they understood that this didn't need to happen as it did. And I think that was the real sense that we took as observers. A profound disappointment in how the elections were conducted.
When you use that particular turn of phrase, we're better than this, you know, this notion of sort of slow release of results, that people who maybe even liked the outcome weren't happy with the process. Ambassador Green, that does resonate again with a U.S. process in recent years, where the expectations around how an election should be conducted seem to not match with how the election itself is being conducted. Is there something more endemic, more structural happening in the context of Nigeria? Or is this about a global fragility of democracy that we've talked so much about over the course of the last decade?
Well, so first off, I hear people talk about the decline of democracy, and I disagree. I think that young people in particular want democracy more than ever before. They want a voice in their future. It's democratic governance that is the disappointment. Systems that don't fulfill the expectations, systems that aren't responsive to the concerns and needs and aspirations, particularly of young voters. And that is a challenge in a number of places. Again, Nigeria is a complicated country, a complex country, a marvelous country with a really bright future. On the other hand, it is 500 languages. It is a wide range of demographic groups and challenges in that sense. But there were things that were failed here that didn't need to be. So last year, when the long-term observers, international observers, were asked to review the systems, among other things, the recommendations were that a stress test should be done, practice tests, a trial run. And that wasn't done because the Election Commission professed confidence. Well, if you're not going to do a trial run and test out the technologies, you are creating expectations. And here, the expectations weren't met, and that has troubled a lot of people. I think the most important thing is what happens next. You pointed out rightly that the winning candidate received just over a third of the votes overall. In fact, all three of the top candidates won the same number of states. And so the real challenge for Nigerian leaders is to put things back together and to find ways to fulfill the aspirations of young people. And that won't be easy.
So, Ope, let me come to you on where Ambassador Green has brought us. Help us to understand more about the president-elect and how these democratically elected leaders do, in fact, put this all back together going forward.
The president-elect, Bola Tinubu, is one of the most influential kingmakers in Nigerian political history. He was a two-time governor of Lagos State, which is essentially the economic capital of the country, which means he has been in the political fabric of the country for a long, long time. And even when he left active governance in 2007, he has been instrumental to the ascension of major political players over the year. So in 2015, he was the major architect behind the formation of the All Progressive Congress, which has been the ruling party since 2015. So he brought together small parties, regional parties, and made them into what has now become a formidable national party today, and which led to the first defeat of the incumbent, you know, president in Nigeria. So that speaks to how much of a strategist he is. But beyond the political realm, is someone who is struggling to garner legitimacy across the country, especially among the young population of people who are heavily disillusioned about, you know, regional politics, tribal politics, and whatever kind of politics that has been playing due to a combination of, you know, circumstances and situations in which the country has found itself. And it doesn't even help the president-elect that is a very shadowy person. His real age is unknown. His education background is contested. Basically, every, you know, personal detail about our incoming president is contested. And you mentioned that the 71, and I had to nod my head while you were saying that, because there is no concrete proof for that, right? So the combination of this factor, being a shadowy person, and been instrumental to major political players over the years, players which have, you know, basically brought this country to where it is today.
Ope, take a pause with me. We're going to have more on Nigeria's elections right after this. It's The Takeaway. All right, you're back with The Takeaway, and we're still in conversation with Ope Aditayo, who's an independent journalist in Nigeria, who's covered the Nigerian elections for Al Jazeera and The Washington Post, and with Ambassador Mark Green, President, Director, and CEO of the Wilson Center, and former U.S. Ambassador to Tanzania. I wanted to dig in on something that both of you have said, Ope and Ambassador Green, where, you know, I began our conversation by reflecting on how young the population of Nigeria is. And both of you, in sort of describing where we are in this moment in trying to understand how this election may or may not be a turning point around democratic governance, have really, you know, sort of said to us, this is about whether or not this new ruling governing regime can address the questions and concerns of young people. So I want to be sure we lay some of those out. Ope, can I begin with you? When you talk about the needs, the concerns, the perhaps skepticism of young people in Nigeria, tell me a bit in a kind of on the ground concrete way. Help me to understand what they are.
I think to understand the yearnings of these major population, major demographic, which shaped the recently concluded election, we need to understand the age. Nigerian returned to independence in 1999. That was like 23, 24 years ago. So those people who have been born after that time are now of voting age and they can vote. And since 1999, basically Nigeria has taken a downward turn. And these are people who have never experienced stable electricity, stable economy, stable currency. Unemployment is skyrocketing. There's, you know, currency depreciation. Universities closed down for 9 months, 8 months in a year at times. the job market is looking bleak and bleak and bleak by the day, right? So this is a demographic which basically has not experienced any good tidings, so to speak, with the Nigerian government. So it is a demographic that is heavily disillusioned, right? And in 2020, there was a protest against police brutality, which is popularly called the NSAS. This SARS, Special Anti-Robbery Squad, was a notorious police unit, which was credited for a wide range of criminalities, including abduction, killings, murder. And you know, young people felt the compelling need to protest, and they went out. And quickly, you know, that single protest against police brutality morphed into a protest demanding for better governance as a whole. And the president of the day shot down people, killed protesters. That singular incident became a milestone in the lives of this demographic, which I also belong to. So it is where we point to, it is a turning point for our generation, because it speaks to the fact that the government would rather kill us than make our life better.
That was so helpful, Ope. And so, Ambassador Green, let me come to you on this, because, you know, I heard you actively move away from the idea of a decline in democracy, right? Instead, pointing to, as we heard from Ope there, right, this desire for self-governance, right? A yearning to do the work of self-governance, not to replace it with autocratic rule, but perhaps, right, a decline in a belief that the current institutions can provide that.
I think that's right. Also, let's remember why this matters so much to us here in the U.S. It's not just Nigeria. These are challenges facing the entire African continent. This is the first set of elections in the largest democracy in the youngest continent in the world. All across Africa, there is a generation of young people who I think are idealistic. They are looking for job opportunities, and they're looking for a voice to shape their future. And it's up to institutions to be able to deliver on that. And I think in the case of Nigeria, it's not only the largest democracy, it's the largest economy. Mm-hmm. It is the economic engine for the region and for the continent. And so I think as we look at Nigeria, we all have to walk with Nigeria on this journey. And I think we all have to find ways to help strengthen democratic governance and help institutions pay attention to the needs and concerns of young people. It's good for Nigeria, but it's also important for the continent and the world.
Let me ask once again this sort of point around the economics here. There's often an asymmetry of information where perhaps sort of ordinary Americans won't hear a lot about Nigeria or about the continent kind of in your daily media listening or watching, but investors and business really understand presumably the critical importance of Nigeria and again of the entire continent of Africa, both as a market as well as a space of innovation. I'm wondering, Ambassador Green, with that asymmetry, sort of how to push through so that our tied shared interests are clearer to a broader American public who are not, you know, perhaps from or connected, you know, across generations to Nigeria.
Well, the African continent matters in an extraordinary way. First off, youngest continent. This is a continent that can be an economic engine. This is a continent that can be a source of ideas and innovations. So on the positive side, we're starting to see U.S. officials pay more attention. Janet Yellen was there in January. As we know, Vice President Harris will be spending time there. Secretary Blinken has just come back from Africa. We're hoping that President Biden will visit this year. So I think Americans and the American political establishment are finally waking up to the fact that Africa matters. And for those of us who are longtime Africa hands, I began my foreign policy career as a teacher in East Africa. It's long overdue. But in order for Africa to play its central role, it has to be responsive to the needs of its rapidly growing young generation entering the workforce. And that, I think, is one of the great challenges. Democracy has to deliver. Institutions have to deliver for these young people. And I think all of us need to do what we can to help. So you're correct. U.S. investors and businesses are looking at Nigeria as a land of opportunity. But I think it should be much more than that. They should look to Nigeria as a source of ideas and innovations, because we need those ideas and innovations, not just for Nigeria, but for the great challenges we're facing around the world.
Ambassador Mark Green is president, director, and CEO of the Wilson Center and former U.S. ambassador to Tanzania. Thank you so much for joining us, Ambassador Green.
My pleasure.
And Ope Adetayo is an independent journalist in Nigeria who's covered the election in Nigeria for Al Jazeera and The Washington Post. Ope, again, thank you so much for being here on The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.